Hello there, I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat, and it's number 298. The reason I know it and didn't have to look at Megan for the actual number is we're so approaching 300 that I'm very keenly aware of it. By the way, there's a great lesson to be learned. I was just saying it prior to the Fireside Chat. In life, progress is made slow and steady. You just do it regularly, not necessarily a vast amount. It goes against our nature because we like to procrastinate. And yet, this is a perfect example. I can't believe it's the 298th. But do it once a week, it mounts up. Anyway, great to be with you. And for those who are new, this is Snoopy. And Snoopy is the late Otto's brother. And he's a terrific basset hound. And we figured we got to get some dog in the dog area. I don't know how long he'll be here. And the answer is not at all. But you got him. Okay, bye, Snoop. By the way, if you have a basset hound and an English bulldog, which is what we now have and had with Otto, you probably have what I would consider the two funniest breeds of dogs. That is the basset hound and an English bulldog. So I usually begin with some thoughts and then take your questions. And I have a very quick one because I want to take as many questions as possible. Last week, I think I only got to one aside from the video question, right? So I have a backlog. So I mentioned this on my radio show. The CDC in the United States, the big health agency, Center for Disease Control, the CDC on its website, you can obviously look this up, it now doesn't say pregnant women. It says pregnant people. And it doesn't say women who are, or breastfeeding women. It says breastfeeding people or people who are breastfeeding. So all I can say is if this has so affected the CDC, this nonsense and this dangerous drivel that men give birth, and men breastfeed, not just women, then I have a question, and it's a very open and honest one. Since they're so utterly and totally untrustworthy in that arena, in what arena are they trustworthy? I think anyone who understands that only women give birth and only women breastfeed have to ask that question. Where should we trust them? So an example is if they say get a COVID vaccine or a COVID booster. Wait, aren't you the folks that deny that only women give birth and breastfeed? So why are you utterly and totally unreliable in that arena, but you're completely reliable in the other arena? I think that that's a fair question. I don't believe that there's any other answer than you're not reliable. It is obvious that you have allowed radical politics to overtake science with regard to who gives birth and who breastfeeds. Then why isn't it politics that has overtaken your position on COVID vaccinations? Just thought I'd raise that issue, and then what people wonder, why are American institutions so little trusted these days? Well, there's a good example. I could actually do every single fireside chat, open every single fireside chat on the subject of the loss of credibility of American institutions. And I know I have an international audience, and I say this with great sadness, but honesty and the pursuit of truth is the number one value, or should be, in one's life. Okay, I'm going to go straight to your questions now. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
Hello, Mr. Prager. My name is Doris. I'm 41 years old. I'm a homeschooling mother of 7, and we live in Virginia. So I found something in Psalms that says that men can give birth, And it's Psalm 7:14. And it says, "Behold, the wicked man conceives evil and is pregnant with mischief and gives birth to lies." And my question to you is, do you think that God, in his sense of humor, put that in there for such a time as this? Thank you so much for all you do.
I want you to know I would fly you to LA just to meet you. That's how much I enjoyed your question. By the way, mother of seven, it's done good for you, I'll tell you that. You look great. I would love to meet your family. They're lucky to have you as a mom, and I'm sure they're lucky to have your husband as a dad. I was not aware of that verse. I checked it out in Hebrew. By the way, the Hebrew, it's 7:15. Christian versions, it's 7:14. There's often a verse discrepancy. But that's exactly what it says. I checked the Hebrew, that men who give birth to evil and to lies. That was very witty on your part. That's what I'm going to say from now on. Yes, men give birth to lies. That's perfect. Don't believe me? Check the Bible. Was it God's sense of humor? Well, we generally attribute the Psalms often to King David, but it doesn't matter. Was it the Bible's sense of humor for times like this? What a great point. It shows you how applicable all these things are through the generations. Thank you. That was terrific. Doris in Virginia. Emily, 29 years old, Hong Kong. "Hi, Dennis. What do you think of considerable age gaps in dating? Let's say dating someone 20 years your senior. We are not fooling around, but I am in a dilemma as my Asian family is very conservative. Age is just one of our concerns. We also do not share the same ethnicity, obviously, so I assume you're Chinese and he's not. Whatever the two ethnicities. Religion, she is an observant Protestant, he is not practicing. And nationality. He is also previously married, though now has good relations with his former spouse, and he has an upright character. Have looked up to you for years and would love your two cents on this. Thank you so much, Dennis." Well, so I'm in a real dilemma here, because obviously I don't know you, I don't know him, I don't know your family. I only know what you've written here. So in effect, all answers are okay. So let's begin with the 20-year gap. So here's my statement on that. I don't know how old you are. Let's say you are 30. Does that sound right? Say you're 30, he's 50. That's a big gap. Obviously, if you're 50 and he's 70, it's less of a big gap. Years are a bigger gap early on in life, obviously. If you have 5 years separating you and an older sibling, when you're 10 and they're 15, it's like the world. But when you're 35 and they're 40, it's meaningless. So 20 years, it depends on your age. I gave a rough just guess, 30 to 50. Your parents are not wrong in raising that as an issue. You are not wrong in considering him as a spouse. They're both valid concerns. So I, so to speak, defended your parents' concern. But now I will give the other side of the picture, and that is, good men don't grow on trees. Would ideally this wonderful man, you said he's an upright character, if he's a wonderful man, would the ideal be he's 5 years older than you? Or even 10? Yeah, that's true. 20 is a lot. On the other hand, terrific men or women don't grow on trees. But I could certainly say that about men. And that's the age issue. The next one. So you don't share the same ethnicity. I understand your parents' concern. It's not one that I would have. I have two sons. I couldn't care less about the ethnicity of the women that they would marry. They're both married, but it means nothing to me. I divide the world between the decent and the indecent. That's the motto of my life. I got it from Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. That's my division, not ethnic. What was the other one? Let's see. Religion. All right, so you're observant Protestant, that's your term, and he is non-practicing. Well, that's actually probably better than if he were practicing a different religion and you were practicing a different religion. So you actually are in a better position than you would be if he did practice another religion. Then what do you do? So hopefully he can join you in your practice, even if it's just out of courtesy or respect if you do marry. And nationality. Okay, so nationality is even less important. Although, I mean, I understand your parents' concern, but again, that's not one that I would generally relate to. He's previously married. That's actually a good sign. If he's 20 years older than you and were never married, that would be a bad sign. So you see, ironically, things that could be troubling are actually beneficial here. So, good luck. Patrick, 42 years old, Columbus, Georgia. Georgia, USA, not Georgia, East Europe. Dear Mr. Prager and patriotic staff, a response to episode number 290 on self-esteem. My wife and I have a 20-year-old daughter. A value that we have tried to instill in her for the past 5 to 7 years is earned self-confidence. Okay, I've often said I have three favorite verbs in English. Earn is one of them. The others are like and should. We are having a difficult time letting her fail without a safety net. Well, the very fact that you are writing that shows that you're wrong. You know you're wrong. You must let her fail without a safety net. The task of a parent is not to make life safe. Maybe it's to make life safe when they're 5 years of age. But the purpose of a parent is to produce an adult, not a safe child. This is something I have noticed from other parents or grandparents. We cannot bring ourselves to just push our daughter out of the house just yet. That may be our only option, but a cloud of parental dereliction of duty makes us hesitate. P.S. Otto was blessed to have you all, as your house was blessed to have Otto. Thank you. Well, let's see. So how old is she? 20. She's 20. All right, with regard to pushing her out of the house, the question is, what is she doing? If she's living in your house and spending most of her time on social media and going to parties, then it's time to have her leave the house. If she goes to work every day and is earning a living or is studying to earn a living, that's a different story. 20 is not too young to be living at home. I think 30 is. So she's not 30, she's 20. So I don't think that that's the issue. I think the issue is your philosophical one about just letting her fail, period. I don't know what she's doing in your house. That's the piece of the puzzle missing in your question. I'll give you an example. I have often noted to people that I did no homework for 4 years of high school. And people are pretty surprised because they think I was always a great student. I was actually, in terms of grades, I was an awful student in high school. I learned a lot, but I didn't study for exams and I didn't do homework. I didn't care about my grades. People say, oh, I feel better. My child doesn't do any homework either. But I always say to them, well, what is your child doing when he or she is not doing homework? That's the question. I was using my time really valuably. I was reading. I actually was starting to teach myself the Russian language. I was learning how to read symphonic scores. I mean, I really used the time I didn't spend on homework really well. So that's the question to ask if your child isn't doing homework. What are they doing? If your child is living at home, what are they doing? All right, next. Wiley, 27, Keller, Texas. Dennis, you are a man of precise language. Don't you think we should call it teeth paste and not toothpaste? I took that because I think it's hilarious. This guy's mind works differently than most. In all honesty, I'm not sure teeth paste would have been preferable to toothpaste. I get your point, since you don't only use it on one tooth. Nevertheless, not sure it would be particularly clarifying to call it teeth paste. He has another example. And a building, when finished constructed, should be called a built, not a building. May I say, the fact that these things even enter your brain shows you how God has made different people. I say that with great warmth. Okay, Michael, 23, Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Mr. Prager, I am curious about your thoughts on grief and how one ought to manage it. I know there is a right and wrong way to work through grief. That is not true. I don't know if there's a right and wrong way to work through grief. I already may not be in agreement with you. Think you go through grief in the way that you feel you have to. I'm not sure there's a prescription. So I just want you to know that. I am 23 and my dad died unexpectedly last month at 62. I am very, very sorry. 62 is young these days. This hit hard on many people, as he was a leader in the community. I live at home and have spent many hours with him, and I am grateful for the time we had. I maintain our Catholic faith and regret looking at Mass as a chore when Dad encouraged us to go. His favorite mantra was, "Get your ass to Mass." That's adorable. No wonder you miss him. A guy who could say that, a religious guy, that's a good one. I have faith and I'm leaning heavily it should be, but doesn't matter, into the Lord. But I am confused as to why it was his time to leave this earth. He was doing many great things, changing students' lives, showing kids how to understand God. Why now? Thanks for reading, Michael Jr. P.S. My family got to see you in Sacramento, California. Great show. Thank you. It's my ongoing battle. Battle may be too strong a word. It is my ongoing project to try to explain my view on these matters. So you're asking, I am confused as to why it was his time to leave this earth. What does it mean, his time? Does it mean that God chose to take him at this time? Because that's, I think that's what you're implying. I personally don't view death that way. You die of natural causes, or you die because a drunk driver hit you, or because of some other illness, or some other natural cause, or some other man-made horrible thing. But I don't believe that God takes us when we die. And if you do, then your question is completely legitimate. What you're saying is, why did God take him then? But if that is your question, about whom can that not be asked? How many people died before the age of 62? Millions upon millions, hundreds of millions. So the same questions, even more radically, could be asked about all these other people who died at your father's age or under your father's age. Which leads me to an important observation. People often ask questions that they should have asked earlier, and they only ask them when it happens to them. I'll give you an example. I am adamantly pro capital punishment. I don't believe every murderer deserves to be executed, but I also don't believe every murderer deserves to live. Some deserve to die. So a woman called my radio show. This is the great, great bonus of having a talk show, because I get to talk with more people than any other human, not to, but with. So she calls me up, said, "You know, Dennis, I never agreed with you about capital punishment, but now I do." I go, "Really? What made you change your mind?" Said, "Well, my brother was murdered. And now I realize it's not right that his murderer is allowed to live." So, of course, I offered her my sincere condolences. To have a loved one murdered is horrible. I can only barely imagine it. But I then said, because I don't feel my task is just to make people feel good, but it's to make people think. So I said, I'm just curious. When all these other brothers and sisters were murdered, you were against capital punishment. Now your brother is murdered and you're for it. Do you get my question? And she said, yes, she does. I think people need to think through life before life thinks through them or forces them to think. I thought about all the people killed by disease or by other people at an early age. When I was at an early age, it didn't take the death of a loved one for me to think through as best as I could the question of unjust suffering, premature death, and so on. Most people don't think about these issues till it hits home. And that's a mistake. I think one should have one's philosophy of life or one's theology intact before such an event takes place. Molly, 31, Olathe, Kansas. "Hey, Dennis, I am a homeschool mom looking to balance my children's education through experiences. If you could pick a few of the best classical music pieces, which would they be and why? They don't necessarily have to be your favorite, but ones you feel would be good to listen to and study for exposure and a general understanding of that world. Thanks, you are the bomb." God, am I the bomb. You know, I wake up every morning and I say that. I am the bomb. I'm not even sure what it means, but it sounds good. So let me analyze this question as I do all of them. If you could pick a few of the best classical music pieces, which would they be? Okay, my best are not necessarily somebody else's best. So it's a very tough question. I'm always asked this because I so want to get people into classical music. So they say, "So what pieces should we listen to?" And I don't know if my picks are the best. I'll give you an answer, but I have no idea if they'll work for somebody else. So in no order of importance, it's hard for me to imagine anybody listening to Handel's Messiah and not being uplifted to the heavens. It's a beyond belief piece. It's got the most famous choral part in the history of music, the Hallelujah chorus. Hallelujah, hallelujah, da dum bum 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 bum. It's the whole thing's inspired. So you could take sections of that, see how the person reacts. I think the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, da 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 dum, da 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 dum. It's hard to imagine that won't affect somebody. Vivaldi's Four Seasons is from an earlier era, and it is also phenomenal. But here is a general rule if you want to get somebody into classical music. And by the way, I fully acknowledge there is a substantial part of the human species that will never get into classical music. I realized this when I was already in high school, and I had fallen in love with classical music. And my best friend, who is still dear to me and very close, we're very close, so it's a long time. I was sure if I just exposed him to great music, he would fall in love with it. And I exposed him to great music, and he invariably started reading a book. I would put on my favorite piece, and he would then walk around the room looking for a book to read. It never touched him at all. It's not going to touch everybody. That's just the way it is. But it could touch hundreds of millions of people who have not been exposed. But here is my rule. You must listen to a piece repeatedly before you reject it. Classical music is not pop music. Pop music, you like the minute you hear it. The first time you hear that song, you love it. That's not always the case in classical music. You've got to listen at least three times. That's my rule. Because the better you know it, the more you will love it. And in some cases, you'll never love it. I fully acknowledge that. How are we now?
28.
Oh, good. Maybe we could do one more. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here's a good one. Marianne, 70 years old, Montreal, Canada. Dear Dennis, I am eager, and so is my husband, to understand the difference between loving and liking. We don't have this finesse in the French language. Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. So I studied French. And that was when I realized they don't have a way of saying I like. You say, il me plaît, it pleases me. But it pleases me is not the same as like. What is like as opposed to love? I have never fully thought that difference through. I'm not sure it's completely definable. Like is less emotionally involved. So, for example, love immediately raises the issue of love. Whether it's a person, I love so-and-so, there's an emotional component. I love pizza, there's an emotional component. I like so-and-so is not emotional. I like pizza is not emotional. Is that a fair, that's a fair distinction, I think,
yeah.
Which I'm just coming up with answering your question. However, having said that, I'm a big fan of like, and my best example is many parents love their children. Almost every parent loves their child, but not every parent likes their child. And that's why I'm a big fan of like. As a general rule, that's a very important thing to have in your life, to like the people in your life. It's great if you love them as well, obviously. Maybe love is intense like, but where there's no emotional component, you really don't have a way to say that in French. I know Hebrew fluently. There's no I like in Hebrew. I know Russian. There's no I like in Russian. It's I don't know if it's unique to English because I don't know all the world's languages, but I don't know another language that has it. And that's why I speak about that and the word earn and the word should as my favorite three verbs, if should is a verb. Good stuff, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody. I'll see you next week. I'm Dennis Prager, Fireside Chat.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.